Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Thursday, right before Christmas, and this is Dan and Chris, and we're here for Culturally Damaged, our little show that we put together for you every Thursday at 3-ish. Not necessarily the same time every week, but we do put it up on Spreaker. That's Spreaker. And we also put it up on a couple other places like iTunes, don't we, Dan?
Yes, it goes into iTunes as well as the Google Play Store.
So if you can't get enough of our goofy butts on Thursday, or if you miss us, you can check us out and listen to us there. That's available on your phone, on your tablets, computers.
Yeah, pretty much everywhere except for North Korea.
North Korea, you cannot listen to us. You cannot listen to much of anything. But lots going on in the free world as we speak. We usually talk a little bit about sports. And I know that that might not interest all of you, but that's what we're interested in. And if you don't like it, you can start your own podcast. And you can call it You Suck.
Everything But Sports Podcast.
Yes. But we're going to talk a little bit today about what happened yesterday in the Tampa Bay area. A long-time pillar of the community, the face of the franchise, Evan Longoria, was traded to the New York, excuse me, not the New York Giants. They used to be the New York Giants, or the Brooklyn Giants, but now they are San Francisco
Giants. I think it was New York.
I think he got traded to San Francisco, did he not?
He did get traded to San Francisco for four players.
So, I'm not a big baseball guy. Dan, you are a lot more in tune to what's going on here behind the scenes and what the reasoning might be. Why did this happen? Why did we let go the guy that everyone comes out to see, the guy who's clutch, the guy who the kids all have jerseys for? He has to sell a lot of tickets. Why did we do this?
Well, to start with, you know, Evan Longoria, he's been with the team almost 10 years. And by the way, we're live for the people on Facebook here. Sorry. We're shooting live here. I just want to make sure everybody's listening to it.
Hey.
So, anyway, that's enough of that. So, you know, Evan, he's been with the team about 10 years. He has been our superstar. Many Rays fans can remember several years ago when Evan was probably right about the time when he got his contract. And he was involved in a lot of different MLB ads and all this kind of stuff. He was at that – they had some little – like the Heisman House in New York or something.
Yeah, he's a good-looking guy. He plays well, well-spoken.
Really, yeah. And, you know, so I think a lot of Rays fans, you know, he was our one superstar that most people naturally knew. And so I think that's what makes this a little bit harder. The reality is, and the Rays ownership and management have discussed this, the Rays, unfortunately, they don't feel that they can compete in the next couple years with the New York Yankees, Boston Red Sox, L.A. Dodgers, Chicago Cubs, etc., all these teams that are spending big bucks the next couple of years. So their decision is, in order to compete some point, they don't want to just compete for, hey, let's see what we can do to make the playoffs each year. They want to compete for World Series. I think that's what we want to. So in their mind, this was the only way that they could do it, is trade away someone like Evan Longoria, hopefully get plenty of prospects, and that way in another few years you retool, you rebuild, and then we make another shot of it in a couple of years.
As a layman here, I kind of feel like this is the movie Major League. Like, you know, are we trying to leave town and we want to get rid of all of our good players so that we suck so bad that we have to leave? I mean, are we trying to lose our way into a new stadium? What's going on?
Well, when you mentioned that, you know, it probably does make people a little nervous. You know, not that I don't think anyone's really discussed that being a reason, but when you think about it, it does make a franchise more appealing when you already have this kind of stuff taken care of. So when you've lowered payroll, when you know that you have a new stadium on the way. So I don't know that we actually know there's a new stadium. There will be a new stadium.
I don't know about that.
Well, there will be a new stadium. It just depends on whether it's going to be locally or
in Montreal,
be somewhere else, yeah,
or Charlotte.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's just. It's tough when you live here because we're the polar opposite of the Yankees, right? If you're really good, the Yankees sign you, and they sign you to a mega deal. If you're really good in Tampa Bay, I should say, you get traded. I mean, every time we have a good player, we get attached to him. We even get attached to his dog. And, like, I loved Astro. Astro was a great dog, Price's dog. the little French bulldog. But, you know, we get attached to these guys when they get good, and they start to become the identity of the franchise, and we start to associate them with the franchise and winning, and then all of a sudden, it's just, they're gone. So every year, we have new faces. The only one face that we could see every year was Evan Longoria, and now Longo's gone. So, I mean, is anyone going to go to the games? I mean, I know it's pretty thin now, but, I mean, if you're bad in St. Petersburg, are you going to get 5,000 fans?
I think, for the most part, I think the fans that go are pretty diehard fans. I don't think we have the Rays are not good enough to have fair weather bandwagon fans. So I doubt that the Rays are going to see a huge drop in ticket sales, you know, like the Marlins. But anyway, the other issue of this, the other side of this too, is that unfortunately, you know, this is a business. You know, and yeah, I guess the other, not just a business, but, you know, I don't know if, you know, people last year, they talked about trading Longoria. A couple of years ago, people said, you know, I don't know about that contract that the Rays gave him. I think we overpaid. He's not worth it. You know, this year he was, I think he batted .261 with around 20 home runs, 85 RBI. His RBIs were up. But, you know, his overall production wasn't that great. He did win a gold glove, and it's extremely important to the Rays. And I think that's probably going to be the more difficult part of this to fill is his defensive.
Yeah, he was an excellent fielder, pretty consistent and clutch hitter. You know, let's face it, he's not A-Rod. You know, he's not going to get the dingers of some of these other big-time players. But he was the face of the franchise, and that has a value, I think. And just getting people to buy the jerseys and the T-shirts with Longoria. Hell, I'm not a huge baseball fan, but I do have a Longoria jersey.
Yeah. You know, and I was going to say, that's probably the one thing, because a lot of people like yourself and a lot of fans figured, hey, if I'm going to buy a jersey, I'm going to buy one that's probably going to stick around, maybe even retire. Yeah. I'm going to get a Longoria jersey. You know, that's what people, I think, a lot of people bought Joe Madden jerseys thinking, you know, coaches, you know, worst thing that's going to happen is the coach will get fired someday, but he'll still have been a really good coach, and I'll still have his jersey.
You know what we should do? I just came up with this idea.
Oh, crap.
You and I should come up with this great plan. Actually, just me, because I thought of it. You didn't think of it. We should make jerseys that have Velcro numbers and letters on the back, so that when your favorite player gets traded, you can just rip it off, you can add a new one on there. Now, I know the MLB wouldn't like this, because they wouldn't sell as many jerseys. But I would like it.
It's kind of funny you say that, because that's actually somewhat how the Rays jerseys are actually put together. So if you notice on certain Major League Baseball teams, the letters are actually, what do you call it, the embroidered
right
onto the back of the jersey. With the Rays and a lot of other teams, what they tend to do is they, instead of having the name embroidered on the jersey, they'll have the name embroidered on another piece of jersey fabric.
Right, and then sew that on.
And then they sew the fabric on, so that when the guy does get sent down, traded, whatever,
you just send it with him.
Yeah, so we might make the seamstress a little unhappy, because, you know, she might not need quite the job if we put Velcro. But
and Longoria's a long name, too, so he's going to have a long strip to have to put in. And it's too bad they didn't trade him to a team that had the same colors. He could just use that one when he gets there to put it on.
Yeah,
that's a shame. You know, is that a cost-saving technique for the Rays?
It probably is. You know, years ago, it's funny.
We got to sell more hot dogs.
I worked for the Clearwater Phillies and in their minor league system, and this was not that long after. This was actually before the Phillies won the World Series. But one of the clubhouse managers was mentioning, and I don't know if you know that the time period where Moneyball came for, where
that's the one with Brad Pitt.
Yeah, and you remember some of the jerseys. I don't know if you remember some of the jerseys that Kansas City was wearing. They have like a vest jersey almost, where they wore an undershirt.
Okay, yeah, since I read the same thing.
Yeah, and so I was told back then that teams went with that because it was cheaper. Because they actually, the jersey itself, when you think about
You mean like back in the 30s when they did it?
No. I'm talking like back in the 2000s, the early 2000s. That teams could save money. Listen, there are teams out there. Anyway, that's what they said.
You got to have a nice T-shirt on there, too.
That's
the Phillies. You got to factor that in.
And maybe the Phillies were a little bit elitist because they have had, like, the same uniform forever and all this other stuff. But that's what I was told.
Well, this is an issue that certainly needs delving into, I tell you that. Cost-cutting on jerseys.
Yeah, saving every penny.
I just, you know, I think maybe the Rays feel like they can win right away if they save that money from Longoria and use their farm system, which is not an exciting thing for a fan to hear because you have new names coming up every year. But you have to admit that the Rays have had a great farm system. They've had several rookies of the year. I think three rookies of the year over the past 5 or 6 years. I mean, they've dominated with young talent, but they always get rid of it. As soon as its market value goes up and they have a lot of worth, we get rid of them and we can't pay them. But we just keep raising these people and then pushing them out.
Well, we do sign a couple. I mean, you know, but I think, unfortunately, it takes two to tango at this. You know, one of them was Chris Archer. They signed him, I think it was a 7-year, $35 million deal. So for a starting pitcher...
That's a lot of guacamole.
It's a lot. It's a lot for you and I and all of our listeners, except for one. I think they know who she knows who she's talking, we're talking about. Mm-hmm. But anyway, But for a major league, you know, $7 million for a starting pitcher, I think a relief pitcher just signed a contract. It might have been 2 years for $14 million. A relief pitcher. He might pitch 50 innings the entire year, and he's going to get paid $7 million plus an average. We're not talking, you know, our closer, or we're not talking the best closer in the game. We're just talking about a middle-of-the-road relief pitcher. Yeah, these
guys make insane amounts of money. I saw a guy the other day. Who got traded, I forget his name, his relief pitcher. He built a $9 million house somewhere, and then he realized he got traded. Him and his wife decided to give the house away to a charity where they could make it a camp for kids to come out. And I'm thinking, this guy just dropped $9 million to a charity like it was nothing, didn't take any time to decide about it. But, yeah, lots of money in baseball. A little worried about the Rays,
but even in this deal, one of the things that's a little concerning to me about this deal. So I don't think the Rays are gonna this. To me, this deal is not made so the Rays can compete next year. It is made to compete in the future. The only thing is that in this deal, though, and this is why I don't. It's not totally about money here. The Rays, I think Longoria. I think I saw he has an $85 million that's still owed to him under this contract. The Rays have agreed to pay $14 million. Of his contract still. And so this sounds almost like one of these deals that the Mets did years ago with Bobby Bonilla, but the Rays are going to pay Evan Longoria like $2.5 million or so, like starting in like year the 2025 through 2029. So like the Rays are just kind of pushing back some of the salary, but not only that, but you still have to get another third baseman. So unless they go the route of taking somebody directly from the minors on a minor league contract where they're paying them, you know, almost nothing league minimum, if they go out and sign somebody, and let's just say they pay $5 million a year, which is not a lot, you know, you think of – so the Rays are not saving a ton of money. But what they are doing is they're giving – you know, if the Rays are truly in a rebuild, and that's what it appears, they gave Evan the option. They said, do you want to stay during a rebuild or do you want to go? And, you know, he elected to go, which I don't blame him. You know, I wouldn't want to lose 100.
So you think he had a part in making this decision?
He was, from what I can understand, he was consulted, and I think he would prefer to stay in Tampa and play for the Rays if they're going to compete. But if they're going to break down the whole thing and start over from scratch, then he wanted to go.
Well, he's definitely going to have a shot in San Francisco where they have a lot of talent. He's a California guy. He gets to go back out there. So good for him. Hopefully he goes out there and wins a ring, because usually when our really talented players leave, they go somewhere like Kansas City or Chicago, and they win rings.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I can't help but think that we're a farm system, really, for the Yankees and Boston and teams in our own division. We're just feeding talent to, not just with players, but even with our manager, Joe Madden, leaving. But
And we actually took back a contract too in this deal. So we I think we took back a player that might have $13 million owed. So, but we did get a third baseman. It was the Giants, I think, about 4 years ago, their first round pick, first baseman. So, and then there's a couple lower level pitching prospects. So of course that's what the Rays. And I've listened to a few interviews with the Rays management, and they've talked about getting back to the roots of pitching and defense. And so, you know, they're going to go back to the days of stockpiling pitching. I'm not sure we're going to see another season where the Rays score, you know, break records.
Could the Rays be any less fan-friendly? we can't keep people around. We got a crappy stadium. We get crappy food. They don't hit the ball.
Well, this year they actually did hit the ball.
The plan is to end that now.
Yeah.
I'm surprised that they've hung on to some players like Wasuza, who had a great year. But they did. They had some excellent hitting this year. Relief pitching hurt them. And we were talking about this earlier. The Rays were in the hunt. They were 500 team. They were hanging around. Right until, about three quarters of the way through the season.
The trading deadline
happens. We get people, For the first time since I remember living here, we actually go out and spend some money on a couple of cats. And what happens? The team completely falls apart. They lose 13 out of 14 games, I believe. That was right around the period a little bit before the period where the Indians went on a 17 or 21, 22 game winning streak, whatever it was. But we just completely fell off. Mm-hmm. And that falling off really changed the direction of the franchise, because had we made the playoffs, had we snuck in the wild card playoffs in the American League East, you got to think that Longo sticks around. They start building on what we have instead of breaking down. But the fact that we finished, was it last or next to last in the division?
No, we actually finished third.
We did finish third. Well, out of what, five teams? Okay. Yeah. We did finish third, but we didn't have a chance in the last 25 games. We knew we didn't have a chance with the league being dominated by the Yankees and even Boston.
Well, and that's the thing, too. I mean, obviously, I think a lot of this, some of these are repercussions to the, Giancarlo Stanton, whatever. I think he goes by Carlos. Anyway, Stanton.
I'm a con
Carlos. By the Yankees getting Stanton, and then there was talk about them getting Manny Machado from the Orioles, and then them still signing another pitcher in the free agent market. That it just makes like, all right. But again, as we talked about in I think it was 2010, Yankees and Red Sox were expected to obliterate the Rays and everybody else in their path, and the Rays made the playoffs. So,
well, on paper, the Yankees and the Red Sox should win it every year. Yep. Really, I mean, last year you had a really stacked team in the Dodgers that probably should have won it. But in baseball, it's a thinking man's game. It's a game of streaks. It's a game of slumps. Anything can happen. That's what makes it so much fun to follow. And there's so many games a season, so long, so much could happen in a season. So you never know. I mean, the Rays might come out and surprise a lot of people and do really well. But just on paper, they really just don't give themselves the chances that the front office. And I understand it's a different market. Yeah. It's different ownership. They've got a lot of money at some of these other teams. We just don't have it. We try to do more with less. Sort of like my college at Marshall. We try to do more.
Our college.
Our college. You actually attended Marshall too. But as a university, my dad and I were talking about recently, we do a lot more with less. People comparing us, a friend of mine was comparing us with University of Central Florida because we kind of came up together. We went up to Division I together into the MAC in 1997. And I believe it was 2003. We both went to Conference USA, so we were kind of forever linked because of that. But he was comparing how well they're doing now compared to how well, we're doing. But you can't compare a school that has 50,000 students, that is funded partially by Disney, who is in an area like Orlando, Florida, with a school that sits in the overdose capital of the country in one of the fattest, unhealthiest towns in the country. I love Huntington. Yeah. I love where I'm from, but, it's not really a paradise. You're not going to recruit a lot of players to come there.
Well, and that's the other thing, too, is that it's, Florida is the number one, number two recruiting place for football players, and UCF is smack dab in the middle of it. And, Marshall gets a lot of his players from Florida, but they're also competing with somebody who's 30 minutes, 2 hours down the road. So
yeah, and I believe Marshall has 28 players on the roster right now from Florida.
But I'll tell you what, just as those Marshall fans, they don't want to hear it. The average Marshall fan doesn't want to hear it. They don't want to hear anything about it. And the same thing is true with a lot of Rays fans. Rays fans say, I don't want to hear about it. If you can't afford players, you sell the team to somebody who can afford to pay players and blah, 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 blah.
Not that easier with the university.
No. Well, and same thing with the Rays. Again, it takes, they're not going to sell. So, people can either, if they want to enjoy.
I hope you're right. But, you get, the writing's on the wall that they do. There has to be some type of loyalty that I don't know about as to why they would be so, married to staying here. Because, when you look at everything considered and the totality of the circumstances for the team, there's got to be some better markets out there they're going to treat him a little bit better.
But see, that's, well, and here, and that's, I guess the issue is whether another market is going to treat them better. But remember, we've talked about it before. The Tampa Bay area is the 11th largest TV market, and we're still growing. So, when you start looking at other networks, or not other networks, other marketplaces, I don't think they're nearly as attractive from a TV revenue.
But you do agree that we have a pretty crappy TV contract right now as it stands.
Correct.
We are about to renegotiate a new TV contract, and that might tell a story.
Yeah.
If we can get a good new TV contract based on the numbers of the population and the people coming in here that are watching the Rays on television, maybe that's what it is. Maybe that's what's keeping the Rays around here, because there are beautiful cities like Charlotte, North Carolina, that are hungry for professional baseball. Louisville, Kentucky. You know, they'd love to have a baseball team. Hell, they have the Louisville Slugger Museum right there on the river. Yeah. You know, they're gonna have to get a good TV contract. But hate to see Longo go, man. That's rough. I hated to see Price go. Hate to see Shields go. And then now it's Longoria. It's just like, when's it gonna stop?
But the other side of it is, the reality is here's our practical reality. Longoria is on the downside of his career. He is not, he's not likely to hit 40 home runs again. He's not likely to, he's not going to win MVP or anything like that. Most Rays, when the Rays tend to trade players, the Rays have usually gotten the best out of their players. It seems unusual that those players go on to actually play better in other cities. So, maybe the only one that I can remember that's really played well or as good, it was Ben Zobrist.
Yeah, Zobrist. But Zobrist was really good here, yes, too, though. Yeah. I think he was a little underrated here because he had some good guys around him. But Zobrist was steady, man. He's a rock. But, yeah, he's gone on and done big things. But you're right. Price hasn't lived up to his contracts. Shields, he did win. I think he won a World Series with Kansas City.
Yeah, I mean, he brought things to it, but he wasn't like
the ace, wasn't the guy, like he was expected to be. But yeah, I totally agree. A lot of these guys. Remember Crawford?
I mean,
it's been so long ago. I mean, he's just kind of fallen off the map completely. Yeah. And he was the man here.
Yeah.
I mean, he was the mayor of St. Pete basically for a long time. Yeah. But yeah, guys do leave here and they stink. So if there's any really good players listening, you might not be that good everywhere else, but you come here, you're going to play well for less money in a crappy stadium.
And it's, with a new TV deal, a new stadium likely in the next few years.
Gold dome over top of it.
Hey, and don't forget, it's like, 80 degrees today, sunny, and we have beaches, so
the weather is nice. The weather is nice. My parents are visiting right now, and they won't go to the beach unless it's completely sunny. And so I'm trying to get them to go to the beach today, and then they're like, well, my mom saw a cloud, so she wouldn't go. So I'm taking pictures when I'm here at the office up in the sky, like, hey, it's blue. Go to the beach. What, are you crazy? Like, you can't do this anywhere else. Well, at least nowhere north of here.
No, and, it's my understanding that the weather is going to change after Christmas. So
is it going to get cold?
Yes. Christmas night or the – I don't know much about this whole stuff, but you have Christmas Eve, Christmas Day, then the Christmas night. The night of Christmas Day, it's supposed to cold front. Could be in the 40s by that Tuesday morning. So if they're going to go to the beach,
well, I'll tell them. Maybe they did go. They did go, but they sleep late and they don't.
Especially before these weekenders. This is going to be one of those long weekends. People are going to be beaches are going to be crowded on the weekend. So
yes, they do get busy. So what? Hey, not to change the subject, but actually to change the subject. What did you think about the Bucks on Monday night? They came out and played. I didn't think they looked bad. I was kind of proud of them.
Yeah, well,
I thought they did pretty well.
I would agree. And this was I recorded a couple games because usually, I hate to say it, I ended up going to bed at 10 o'clock the night of the game. But I recorded it, and it was one of the few times I actually watched it because I've recorded a few games in the past, but I've always, it was a blowout or they just sucked, 3-4 turnovers. This one I watched. And what I saw was a quarterback who actually was everything that we want him to
be. That's Jameis Winston.
Except for one play.
There was the one play. But Jameis Winston looked like Jameis Winston on Monday night. And I think that he can be like that. I honestly, my opinion is that he needs a new coach. I think he needs a new head coach. He needs a new offense coordinator. I think Cutter's – I'm not a big fan of changing coaches every 2 years, and I don't think it's healthy for a franchise. but I think that Jameis needs a new face. I think he needs a new offense. Have you noticed in that game, it was a three-step drop, got the ball out every time. The plays, I think, were set up a little differently for Jameis to be able to get the ball out. He didn't even have one of his best receivers playing most of the game in DeSean Jackson, who went out. But he still managed to get the ball to Godwin. Yeah, some great plays to Humphreys. And wow, what a catch by Evans in the end zone.
Yep.
The moss-like catch in the end zone.
Well, you know, I've heard others, you know, who are professionals within this game, and they both seem to some of them came to the conclusion that, you know, this may have been one of those instances where you have an addition via subtraction here with DeSean Jackson going out, that it may have freed up Jameis to not worry about who he's throwing the ball to.
You know, that's a good point. There's a lot of pressure on Jameis to kind of utilize DeSean Jackson, and it's really not part of his game. I don't think his repertoire is the deep ball that often. And there was a lot of pressure on him to utilize that. And I think that's a good point. I've really never even thought about that. But I do like Godwin.
Yeah.
I think Godwin is a good possession receiver with the speed to get downfield when he needs to. He can break tackles. He blocks downfield. I really like him. I think we have to hang on to Evans, though, man. I think Evans is one of the best receivers around. And if we're not careful, you know, we're gonna lose him. So if we can hang on to Jameis, Evans, get that defense healthy again, get in the draft and get some pass rushers. For God's sake, they have no pass rush. How did Julio Jones only catch three balls?
Because they ran for like 250 yards.
Didn't have to throw it, did they? And when they did throw it, they threw it to Devontae Freeman out of the backfield, and nobody was near him.
Yeah, yeah.
That kills me. Like, why are linebackers not out there on
that? And you know, I think all these defensive players. I mean, first of all, there were a lot of defensive players that didn't even start the game, and the Bucs lost a lot of people during the game. But to give up, you know, I watched that first half, 17 points. They gave up the first half. They only gave up 7 more points in that second half as a defense. And so,
not bad. No, and it was like a Civil War battle out there, man. There were guys laying all over the field the whole game. And, you know, you like to see them leave it out there. If they weren't playing for Cutter, maybe they were playing for their fellow teammates. But they were playing hard. And they gave Atlanta everything they wanted. And that's not the conversation that we thought we were going to be having at this time of the year. We figured, hey, when we bring Atlanta in here this year, we're going to put it on them. Because last year we went there and put it on them. And we owe him one from coming back here last year. But it's not the conversation we're having. But we know that this team hasn't given up. They got on national TV and showcased a lot of talent. We got to see one of my favorite people, John Gruden, get inducted into the Hall of Fame or the Ring of Honor, and gave a terrific speech. I thought that was really, really cool how they ran the play that they ran in the Super Bowl. That was neat, and I wish they didn't cut out from it. I wish they had played the whole thing, but I understand they got to pay the bills. But I understand that you had a little bit of an interview with Chucky himself.
I was able to catch up with, as you said, Chucky, since he says he doesn't like that. But I had a few minutes with John, and we had an interview, and I think we'd like to play that for everybody.
All right. Well, this is actually really big for our station to actually get John Gruden interview done here on Baycast Radio and on Culturally Damaged. So congratulations to you, Dan, on the big interview. Good to see you got some press credentials now. And let's play it.
You would not agree to interview with Chris, but we'll get to that later. But anyway, thank you for joining us, and we have a few questions, so let's get started. So the Bucs are going through a tough season this year, and some people have questioned whether Jameis Winston is going to be the Bucs franchise quarterback going forward. What do you think about Jameis, John?
Yeah, you can win around him. He won 9 games last year in his second year. He's obviously getting his eyes open to how hard it is in the NFL, and hopefully it's a lesson for him and a lot of young players out there. This is a short trip from the penthouse to the outhouse. And from the outhouse to the penthouse, you can ask the Rams, you can ask the Jaguars. They have gone up in this league in a rapid pace, and there have been teams that have fallen out of the sky as well. Remember, we won a Super Bowl 1 year, and I'm working at the FFCA the next.
John, I understand that you're running the FCA. What exactly is that?
Well, that's the Fired Football Coaches Association. I'll send you a hat.
Yeah, a hat would be nice. John, Doug Martin was suspended last week. What do you think about the Bucs' running game?
It's tough. I mean, it is tough. They really struggle to run block.
I guess that's not much of a surprise considering all the injuries on that offensive line. Dirk Cutter's been on the hot seat the last few weeks, and people have been talking about you becoming the next football coach of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Are you even interested in the job, John?
I don't know. We'll have to wait and see.
I'm not sure that was what our listeners wanted to hear, but I'm sure you have your reasons for keeping it private. John, I only have a few more questions left, but I did want to get your opinion about Thursday night football.
I don't like it much, and I really don't like the uniforms either. I had to watch that game last night in black and white. My eyeballs hurt.
John, I'm not sure the NFL would appreciate it, but I tend to agree with you. Those uniforms are terrible, and the product they put on the field is not much better. Well, John, it's been fun. Thank you for taking a few minutes out of your busy schedule to talk to us and our listeners. Hopefully next time you might agree to be interviewed by Chris.
It's never going to happen, man.
Of course, if not, I'll always be here, and our listeners will always be listening. Thank you.
Wow, that was good stuff, man.
All right.
Good stuff.
You,
well done. It was good to hear, you know, it was good to hear how soft-spoken and hard-hitting you could be at the same time. It really shows a certain level of tact. And the fact that you weren't nervous at all when you talked to one of the great legends around here was super impressive. Sucks that he won't talk to me, though.
I know. I probably should be the proper way to say that was about how I was going to say it, is I am anything but professional.
Well, so. I thought you did a very good job. And just because, you know, one incident at the spa, and I he won't talk to me ever again. So, you know, I'm the bad guy, I guess. But very, very good questions. And
the hot tub thing didn't help either.
I don't want to talk about it. Hey, let's go to a short song, and we'll come back. And when we get back, we're going to talk a little bit about politics. So if you're a political junkie, come back and listen to us, and we're going to talk a little bit about, you know what's going on. I don't have to tell you. We'll be right back. All right, we are back. It's good to have everybody listening to us today. It is Cruel to Be Kind, and that's Nick Lowe, as you probably know. But lots going on in this crazy world of ours. It looks like Congress passed their tax bill. Congratulations, Dan, on the big tax cuts that you will be getting as a billionaire. I will not be receiving those tax cuts. In fact, by 2027, my taxes will be skyrocketing. And that's what the middle class needs, you know, a little good kick in the butt. That's what they need.
We'll worry about that in 2026.
Yeah, 2026, when Evan Longoria is getting his millions of dollars, it will all be taxed very, very lightly. So that was probably a good move on his part. He probably negotiated that in there. So just in case, I don't want to be in the middle class in 2027, so I want to get paid then.
He probably should have made sure that his contract was payable before Trump's term is over. But
well, that may be sooner than later. There's a lot going on right now.
Not his presidency.
Well, it might be a short term. But I am being a little presumptuous, as you might say, often am. But now with legislature out of town, there are a lot of rumors, and I will call them what they are. They are rumors that if Donald Trump was going to fire Special Investigator Mueller from the FBI, that he would do it now, that this would be the time that he would do it because legislature's out of town. He's getting a little close. He's gotten some emails. He's been working up this this Twitter ramp, and the talking points all around Washington with a lot of Republicans has been to discredit the FBI and to discredit Mueller and say that everything's gone wrong and this is a corrupt investigation. And so it's like we're leading to this buildup that we really feel, at least on my side, that is about to happen. Your take on that is that, I don't think so.
Well, my take on it is, at this point at least, as you know, as I like to say, there's a lot of rumors and speculation going on with what Trump is saying or Trump is going to do. As we all know, Mr. Trump likes to say a lot of different things in Twitter. Some of that stuff probably shouldn't be said. But what's wrong?
I don't know where that noise is coming from.
Oh, that's me. That's my laptop, sorry.
Dad.
So these stupid ads that start, these pop-up ads, we'll have to do a show on pop-up ads, but interrupting extreme. Thank God that didn't come on during the Gruden interview.
Oh, God.
He would have been pissed.
He would have been so mad. You would have not been the Gruden grinder.
I would not have gotten a second interview.
No, you wouldn't. Thank God.
He would have put me in your category. Anyway, but, you know, he says a lot of things on Twitter. And I just think that there's a large step between what he says on Twitter and what he actually does. He tends to be someone who likes to, I don't know, I guess the term is bluster, or he likes to.
I feel like you're walking on eggshells right now.
He likes to pop off a lot, but usually doesn't turn into anything in reality.
Do you understand how that could be hard for the American public, for a president to say things? And then not do things, and vice versa. I mean, for him to say things, because you're saying that there's a difference between what he says and what he does. And that, to me, is sort of an indication of somebody that I don't want to be president.
Well.
Do you? I mean, is that the kind of person you're looking for?
I would prefer that our president do what he says and, you know, says what he means. The reality, though, is that our president has embraced social media and it's not just the embracement of social media, but the use of social media to get out his point. And social media is probably, I'm not an expert, but it doesn't seem to be the best way to get your message across. It is a direct way, but it's obviously very difficult. I think you said they've increased the 140 characters to a few extra characters, but
yeah, they did.
You know, I still don't think it's probably the best way to get your message out there.
I mean, I think it's a useful tool for politicians, but I think you have to limit it. I mean, there was a period when television came out and politicians had never seen television before. So all of a sudden, instead of doing the fireside chats on the radio every Sunday, we had a president who basically had access to television to speak to the people as often as he wanted to. And it wasn't quite as often as you could with Twitter. Like if I wanted to get on TV in the 1950s, I couldn't just wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning and say something. With Twitter, it just really caters to that impulsiveness that this president has. And, you know, you want to say somebody should just take away his phone, but you know you can't. You can't tell this guy what to do. And I don't think it's such a leap of faith to speculate that Donald Trump would fire the FBI investigator, considering the fact that he fired the last FBI director who was investigating him. Why wouldn't he fire this one? This one's getting even closer to him.
Well, I mean, at least the previous director, I mean, I think the reality was, now the timing of it could have been better timed, but the reality of that is that members of Congress on both sides of the aisle, even the ex or the presidential candidate Clinton, would have made or had made, I don't know, maybe Hillary didn't make actually statements, but a lot of people in Congress believe that Comey should have been fired earlier. Now, wasn't he who was the director? Wasn't it Comey?
James Comey was the director.
But anyway, I was just making sure that I was correct in his name, that's all.
He played a big part in Trump getting elected, and I'm not saying that it was an intentional move to get him elected, but he did announce that he was going, that the investigation on Clinton had ended, and then about a week before the election, or 2 weeks before the election, he announced that he was reopening it, and then he reclosed it, like right before, which was a very, important time in the election. And a lot of people think that it might have swung it in a certain direction. I'm not saying that that's true, but some people think that did happen, including Hillary Clinton herself. I'm not sure that it did. I think she lost that election on her own. But I will say that, Comey was somebody that the president was very appreciative of at the very beginning and had very nice things to say. But when Comey said he was going to do his job and that he was going to investigate matters with Russia collusion with the president began to ask him questions about not prosecuting Flynn, and it got kind of strange. There became some light stepping over at the White House, and then all of a sudden he was fired. We bring in a new guy, and what's interesting about this was that Jeff Sessions is the Attorney General. Okay, Jeff Sessions from Alabama. Sessions recuses himself from the situation, so he can't get involved. Because the hairy thing about this is the president himself can't fire Robert Mueller. He can't do the deed himself. It has to come from the attorney general, which is Jeff Sessions. Problem is, Sessions has recused himself. So there's a legal opinion out there that's pretty strong that Jeff Sessions can't be the one to fire him because he's recused himself from the situation totally. Now you've got Deputy Rosenberg, who is the assistant to Jeff Sessions, who is now in charge of it, who recently said that he's not going to get rid of Mueller, that there's absolutely no cause to terminate him right now. So he says he's not going to do it. So there's a lot of different things that can happen now. If Trump wants to do it and he goes to Sessions, Sessions says, I can't do it, I'm not doing it, then he's got to go to Rosenberg. Rosenberg says, I'm not doing it. What's he going to fire Rosenberg? So then he fires Rosenberg and then puts somebody in there who will do it, and then he gets fired. Very almost the same thing what Nixon did.
Well, it's possible. I was trying to find – there were some quotes for some people within the White House that said – they're going to say it. I can't tell you whether it's believable or not believable. I don't trust anything any political person says, with more than a grain of salt, or take what they say. But anyway, some of the people within the White House said that the president has no plans to fire Mueller, even though, and I think that there is still a big step from calling an investigation a witch hunt than to actually making a firing. And even if the president were to fire, there's still the big question, does that actually change anything or not? The only thing it would really change would be the fact that the next person up might feel less inclined to do it. But just because you fire somebody doesn't mean the next person in line isn't going to just pick up the investigation and go. I'm not sure that firing Mr. Mueller is an answer. The only thing that firing Mr. Mueller will do will be to upset the public, but also upsetting, which is probably, it should be more important, but the reality is it would upset both houses of Congress. I don't think
would
Republicans
it, would it? I'm not sure that the Republicans would not back him.
There's some talk here. I was just reading something about a proposed bill that would, maybe it's because of the certain situation with Sessions recusing himself to try to find a solution, that if the some sort of three judge panel or something to make a decision or something on whether somebody should be fired. But
well, there's also the question that if he does fire the investigator here, whoever it is, if he fires Rosenberg because he won't fire Mueller, I feel like Ferris Bueller's Day Off, I'm like Mueller,
yeah.
Mueller. Mueller. But if he does fire Rosenstein to fire Mueller, there's a question of whether or not that act in itself is an abuse of power or an obstruction of justice in the eyes of the court. So whatever he does is likely going to get a review from the Supreme Court. And people argue all the time, well, the Supreme Court has more conservatives on it than it does liberals. But, you know, the Supreme Court, we don't know what they're going to do. And especially considering all of the remarks that the president has made about the judiciary over the past 2 years and how, you know, they have too much power, he thinks, and that they shouldn't have this power to control the executive branch. And this character assassination of Mueller that the president and his staff are doing right now is completely unheard of and uncalled for. This guy's a Republican, first of all. Robert Mueller is a registered Republican who worked for both Bush and Obama, is known as a very good prosecutor, and as a former state prosecutor, I can tell you that he is very highly regarded among prosecutors. And, you know, all of a sudden, you know, he's corrupt. And with no evidence whatsoever, we see these tweets that he's corrupt. This is sad. I can't believe he's coming after me. Why would he come after me? Go after Clinton. You know, and what does Clinton have to do with this?
Well, that's part of politics. The whole, just like a magic show, distract and all this kind of stuff. So, I mean, it doesn't matter whether you're in politics or you're in baseball. There's always, hey, look at this pretty little thing over here and don't worry about what I'm doing. So there's a little bit of that.
But isn't Trump playing it both ways here? Because all I hear from his supporters is that he's not a politician. And we elected him because he doesn't act like that. He's not a politician. He doesn't get into politics. Now it's like we're dismissing his behavior because, oh, that's just politics. That's just what good politicians do. So it's like you can't really have it both ways.
Well, I'm not necessarily trying to support or whatever. I'm trying to explain at least my feelings are why he may do something. But you know, the part that I do find troubling is when somebody, anybody with any sort of, you know, not clout, but just in his position, to say that a process is corrupt, to throw words around like corrupt. You know, I don't have a problem with people, you know, with him calling it a witch hunt. A lot of people, I mean, you can say a lot of things, but the last thing you want to do is say that the whole system is corrupt, because then if you're an average citizen, if you feel that the FBI is corrupt when investigating the president, what faith do you have that your FBI or other law enforcement agencies have in investigating every other normal day things if they
are
corrupt?
You throw the whole thing upside down, and Trump has made a political career on throwing things on its head. And if that's one thing when you do it with the EPA. It's one thing when you do it with campaigns. It's another thing if you do it to the Department of Energy. But when you start turning law enforcement on its head and you start devaluing law enforcement and our people in intelligence, you have to think, is military next? You know, what else is next? Anybody that has anything negative to say about him, you know, he completely cuts them off and tries to assassinate them, their credibility. And so, you know, I'd like to know what more people in law enforcement think about this. I mean, if they think whether or not that the president is beyond being investigated for probable cause to be indicted.
I have a feeling that if you're a supporter of the president, most people are probably going to give him the benefit of the doubt that there's some sort of bias, maybe not a corrupt, as he will call it, or something, but they'll say that somehow this investigation is biased, or that somebody doesn't like him or something. So I'm sure people will believe that. People who didn't support Trump will just, you know, it's going to be, look, this is what we told you. This is why we said he shouldn't be president. You know, stuff like this, and it just kind of piles on. So, unfortunately, there doesn't seem to be a whole lot out there that changes people's minds about.
No, it doesn't, and that's the big problem, is that everyone is Coke or Pepsi, diehard, you know, one or the other. And if you like the other one, don't even bring it in my house.
Well, it's like, you know, college football. It's like voting for who's number one, number two in the beginning of the year. You haven't seen anybody, you know, and it doesn't, but those rank, you know, but what people think about them to start with holds true.
This whole party loyalty above country loyalty is really, gotten to me. There are certainly people out there that want this investigation to be successful and want him to be prosecuted only for the reason that they didn't want him to be president. And there's absolutely no doubt in my mind. But I think telling us that our law enforcement system on the federal level is tainted and has been infested by politics is absurd, especially when you're talking about the Federal Bureau of Investigation, who, let me tell you right now, is not a hotbed for liberalism. Okay, the FBI is not where hippies go to smoke pot. You know what I'm saying? These are people who are hardcore law enforcement officers, and I tell you right now, if you took a poll at the FBI of who they voted for.
I thought you were about to say if you took a drug test.
They would all pass. I'll tell you right now, because they do take drug tests. But these are conservative folks, man. Even the ones that are appointed by progressive presidents tend to be very conservative. And living in Washington, D.C. and knowing a lot of these people, I know how conservative they are. So to think that the FBI is out to get Trump because they don't want a Republican in office, that's absurd to me.
No, and I think though that, you know, in this circumstance, I guess, you know, there has to be to me this investigation should have some sort of defined focus. What are they looking for? Are we looking for evidence that Trump, that his campaign, that his, you know, actually colluded with Russia?
Yeah, that's what the basis,
you know,
is.
Or
that's
are we just basis worried that they had some conversation about
no
potential stuff?
Well, first off,
when he's coming into office,
collusion in itself is not illegal. It's whether or not we were putting them up to doing things that were illegal in order to win. And then it's really like what happened with Nixon and what happened with Clinton, Bill, that is that we start to go in for one thing, and then what we do is we find out a bunch of other things. So the people who are getting investigated always say, hey, this is becoming a fishing expedition. You can't just come in here and look for anything that we did that was wrong. Well, actually, he can. If he goes in there and during his investigation for A, say if I get a warrant against you for A, say I have probable or reasonable suspicion to believe that you have heroin stockpiled in your basement. I get a warrant. I go in. During the course of that warrant, while I'm walking in the house and executing that warrant, I find that you have kidnapped four people and they are in a room. Now, are you telling me that I can't prosecute you for having those four kidnapped people in that room just because the main reason I went in there was for the probable cause and executing the warrant for heroin? So what they've done is they've gone in there and they found other things. And so I wouldn't call it a fishing expedition. I would just call it a general sight and open public view. They found these things that have come out, and people have been prosecuted, or at least people have been, arrested, and those people are starting to talk, and those people that they're getting to starting to talk. And now what you have is a scary situation, because it seems like we're getting closer and closer and closer and closer to the president.
I don't follow all these things from a day-to-day basis, but, I remember reading something about Flynn and one of his, that he lied about meeting an ambassador, had a meeting or something. And there were some other things. So I think, to me, there's two separate things going on. Did the campaign collude with Russia as far as the campaign? Personally, I don't believe that the president's campaign coordinated or did anything. I think Russia, they have their own reasons for doing what they do.
How do you explain these meetings?
Well, there could be meetings about other things other than the campaign. So I don't know. That's a coincidence. Well, he was, there's a lot of stuff going on. So, I mean,
That they were talking about opposition research against Hillary Clinton. I mean, that's already happened.
So we'll have to see. But
I mean, I would encourage
you to read up a little bit. I told you. I mean, I'm not going to comment on stuff that I don't know about. So I'm not going to.
I mean, back in the 90s, Ken Starr went in to investigate Watergate. Ken Starr was not by any means an FBI agent. He was
he was actually a judge. He served as Solicitor General for George H.W. Bush. But he also served as independent counsel. He was who was the Attorney General Janet Reno put in charge of investigating Bill Clinton for Whitewater. And so what happened in that, as you remember, instead of finding something in Whitewater, they found something else. They found that he was having an affair with an intern.
What kind of white stuff did they find?
Yeah, well, you'll have to check the dress. I think it's still on there. But so, you know, they go in there for some major violations in these financial fraud and schemes that they went in there to find the Clintons on. And what they found was there was inappropriate sexual behavior going on in the White House. So, you know, don't tell me that a special prosecutor can't find something if he's looking for something else, you know, just by happenstance.
Two wrongs don't make a right, you know.
They certainly don't. But I just am very nervous, man, about what's going to happen if he does fire Mueller. Because having a little bit of sense of the pulse of the other side of the people, and I know you think that generally people don't care, but it has reached a boiling point that if he fires the second person who's been investigating him, that he's making a statement to the United States that he is above the law. And if he does that and the country thinks that we live in a country with no justice, then I'm telling you, things are going to change. And I know for a fact that things are already planned spontaneously if he does fire Mueller just in this area alone.
Wait a minute. How can you say that they're being planned spontaneously?
If it happens, we all know where to go.
Well, you know what they're doing. Listen, organizers are ready.
They are.
They have bullhorns and hot chocolate mix and sleeping bags.
Mm-hmm.
They're ready to go.
You're making fun of it, but it's America, man. It's finally the people need to make the government scared of the people instead of the people being scared of the government. We're not ran by a dictatorship in this country, and the people are going to stand up and let this government know that this is not going to be tolerated, and that if you committed the crime, then you sat and watched the investigation happen, and if you didn't do anything, then you're going to be fine. You're going to trust in the justice system. But if you did and you're trying to obstruct the justice system, then you're going to go down for it just like you or I would if we did obstructed any investigation that would happen right here. And that, you know, there's nobody above the law.
No, I agree. I mean, if the investigation plays out and, you know, we'll see what he says. If you know, he needs to get impeached or whatever, you know.
Well, it might not even happen. Out. I mean, you might find out in the investigation that a couple of people that he was close to did some things, but he had no knowledge of it. And if they can't prove that he had any knowledge of it, then he's going to continue to be president up until 2020. But
or 2024. Either way.
Well, he has to get reelected, and that might be quite of an uphill battle right now, depending on who the Democrats put up in 2020. But I can tell you that repealing Obamacare was vastly unpopular. So they didn't get that done. The tax bill was very unpopular. They got that done, even though it was very unpopular. And then he comes out yesterday and says, actually, what that tax bill did was repeal Obamacare. I just didn't want to say it because I didn't know how you guys would react to it. So it's like, oh, okay, I snuck that one by you. Okay, fair enough. You fool me once. So his approval rating has reached a history low since we've been keeping records for first-term presidents. So all I'm saying is maybe the guy just wants to wreak havoc for 4 years. I'm not even sure he's going to run for another term. I mean, do you think he will?
I have no idea. He probably wants to get back into making business. I mean, the reality is he's gotten to say he's president of the United States. I don't think he wants to leave midterm or anything. Nobody likes that. I don't know. He'll probably run. I don't know that. Has there ever been a midterm president not run for a second?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Second term. Yeah, there's been a lot actually. Lyndon Johnson didn't run for a second term. That was, I think, the most recent president. There's been several who have lost.
Yeah.
After the first term, but there's been some who just didn't want to do it again, including Lyndon Johnson, who it just took a toll on him and he couldn't do it and all the lies.
Now he took over, correct?
He did. He took over and he won an election.
Yeah.
And then he had the opportunity to run for another election, and then opted out. And you gotta imagine what a guy like Lyndon Johnson went through with Vietnam going on, civil rights going on, like all the things that were happening in the early 60s up until late 60s
was just had to be really stressful. And I feel like we're kind of entering into that mode again right now, where there's just so much stuff going on culturally that we're really at a turning point with our country right now, which direction it's going to go. And
there's lots of turning points, I feel. I mean, I think we always have to, you know, I know the old adage is, I think my parents' generation, your parents, they probably all thought, they saw us in college and high school and they thought, oh, God help us. What's going to happen when these guys are in charge? And I think we have to take the same approach, you know, with this, that there's going to be lots of forks in the road, you know, through our history. And, you know, we'll make it through this, you know, for better or for worse. In 2 years, we have another election or so.
I hope so. I just hope we make it to Monday, because there are a lot of presents under the tree. And some of them have my name on them. And I am ready to tear into them.
Well, so what are you going to do this? Well, let's no more about this other important stuff. Let's get to the important part.
Okay.
So what's happening for Christmas?
My parents are here, as I told you earlier. We're going to enjoy Christmas at the house at the Parker Estate, the Southern Parker Estate here in Palm Harbor. And we're just going to hang out with the dog. And we're going to open presents. We're going to have a nice dinner. We'd like to invite you over if you'd like to come over.
Have you all ever celebrated Christmas in Florida?
No, this is our first Florida Christmas. My grandfather passed away in February. And so he was a little feeble, and it was tough for him to get down here. So we always just did everything up there with him. But now that we're here in Florida, it's a little different because it's so warm. My parents are kind of getting used to it. But it's going to be fun, man. What about you? You got anything planned?
Well, I'm going to probably end up at my friend's house. So we got lots of I still have some presents to wrap. This year I'm going to wrap presents. I think last year I might have just brought like a big trash bag in and said, here you go. Here's your present, kid.
That's the Dan I know. Let me tell you something about Dan here, if you're listening. Dan is a new man lately. He has been on it. He's dieting. What have you lost, 25 pounds?
Just about.
Dan's lost just a hair under 25 pounds.
Hair over.
Just a hair over. Oh, you've lost more than 25 pounds. Okay.
A hair
he's
more.
Lost at least 25 pounds. He's cleaned the office to the point where I don't recognize it. He is busy all day long. He is productive. He is a new man. I'm not sure what happened, Dan.
Let's get one thing straight. I am always busy, and I am almost always productive. That hasn't changed. Now, the part about cleaning up the office, that has changed.
You're always busy. I'm just not sure what you actually produced during your busyness. Now I'm seeing results.
I produced an interview with John Gruden. Well, what have you produced?
Well, it sounded like you had a professional producer to me, honestly. So I'm actually impressed that you produced that show. I have not produced much. I need to produce some wrapping. I have a lot of presents. I was going to tell you what I got my folks, because some of them are kind of funny, but I'm not going to, because they might be listening. They might have figured out how to operate it and start listening.
Have you opened up the computer?
Yeah. Shut up. No.
Why can't I get this thing to stop?
Yeah.
I listen to him all the time at home.
Yeah, I don't understand why they want to listen to it, but they do. And
yeah. So are you cooking? You doing any cooking?
You know, my mom always cooks on the holidays, and that's the only day of the year she cooks. If she's listening, I'm sorry, but that's true. She cooks on the holidays. I think she's going to cook this year. I think we're going to get a ham, and we're gonna bake a ham.
Do you actually have stuff to cook with?
Oh, yeah.
The appropriate pots and pans.
Absolutely.
And roasting things.
I cook all the time. I love to cook. Right.
The air fryer, so I know you're like me with the air fryer, so we put everything.
I'm like Ron Popeil with the air fryer, man. I'm trying to sell that thing to everybody. That was the best thing I think I've ever gotten. I put everything in there, man. I pulled it out of the freezer, put it in the air fryer, set it and forget it.
Listen, that forget it part, it, to me, is just about one of the best features, because your oven – there's no putting something in the oven and then just getting up whenever you feel like it. You put it in the oven and you better get your ass off the couch within 1 to 5 minutes, otherwise it's going to burn.
No, air fryer, yeah, man. The
put
new
it in
wave.
There, boom, it's done.
And you don't fall asleep, man. Yeah. Don't fall asleep. I don't want to read about your place burning down and I got to do a radio show by myself. That would be terrible. John Gruden would be upset too, your buddy John. So, hey. I hope you have a nice Christmas, buddy.
Thank you.
And
oh, by the way, are you going to go to Honey Baked Ham? Where are you getting your ham?
We don't know yet. My
you know where they are?
Where's a good place?
Well, Honey Baked.
Okay, that's where Out 19, right?
Yeah.
I think we're going to hit that up. I think I've convinced the folks to do it. They found one at Winn-Dixie because my parents love Winn-Dixie. And I'm like, no, it's Publix. It's right down the road. And they're like, no, man, we like Winn-Dixie. It's cool. But they haven't ventured to Publix yet because Winn-Dixie's closer and they're scared they're going to get lost. But it's crazy because I have six Publix within a mile from my house.
That might be the way to get your parents to move down here, taking them to the Publix.
I don't know, man. They're still trying to get over the awesomeness of Winn-Dixie. Once they get past that, they're going to go to Publix and then maybe even Sprouts.
Wow. So no, they're not. There's nothing to eat in Sprouts, so stick with Publix.
Yeah, for them, you're probably right. You're right. Well, hey, it's been a good time. I got to talk about a lot of things. We laughed, we cried, we hurled. We're going to come back next week. We're going to do another show. It's our last show of the year, so we'll do our year-end roundup next week.
Talk about some Christmas and Hanukkah presents, maybe?
Yes, we're going to talk about Christmas, and maybe we'll sneak in some Hanukkah for you, Dan. But I'm tired of your war on Christmas. Hey, we'll talk to you next week. Thanks a lot for listening. Here's some Run DMC for your listening pleasure.
Have a Merry Christmas.